from KQED.
From the Oakland Asian Cultural Center, I'm Michael Krasny. After months of failed negotiations with the district, Oakland's 3,000 teachers went on strike at 6:30 this morning. The teachers' union is asking for a 12% pay increase and smaller class sizes. The district says they're too financially strapped to meet the demands. Today we're broadcasting from downtown Oakland on the first day of the strike, and we'll hear from the school board, the union, teachers, and parents about what's next for Oakland schools. And that's coming up next after the news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Oakland teachers hit the picket lines this morning. Nearly 3,000 union members are striking for a 12% pay increase over 3 years and smaller classes. The district says there are not sufficient funds to meet the demands. The work stoppage affects 37,000 students across Oakland's more than 100 public schools. The last teacher strike in Oakland 9 years ago ended after a day, but a strike in 1996 lasted 26 days. And union leaders say they hope for a short strike this time and plan to return to the bargaining table at 9 a.m. tomorrow. We're broadcasting live from downtown Oakland at the Oakland Asian Cultural Center this morning. And joining us first is KQED education reporter Vanessa Roncagno. And Vanessa, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Vanessa, do we have you?
I'm here.
Okay, I'm glad I didn't hear your voice. You're on the picket lines. Tell us what you're seeing.
Yeah, I'm at Glenview Elementary School. It's at Market and 53rd in Oakland. There's only 25 teachers out here. We understand that only one teacher is inside today. They've been marching around, picketing. Students have started to show up with their parents. And we understand that only about 10 students are actually inside out of around 450, and that some of the support staff represented by other unions, like SEIU and AFSCME, are joining in solidarity while others aren't. And I'll say it's getting warmer out here. It was really cold earlier, but people braced it nonetheless.
I'm glad that that's the case. But what are you hearing from the teachers? I mean, generally, are they upbeat? Are they hoping that this will be resolved sooner? Or are they in for the long term if necessary?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like they're in it for as long as it takes to get what they want, but they're eager to get back in their classrooms. I mean, it does pain them to be away from their students and to know that their students aren't in class learning.
Are they concerned that there are others teaching their students? You've got substitutes there, and you've got administrators actually womaning the classrooms?
You know, I haven't heard a whole lot of talk about that, especially given so few students actually seem to have showed up at this particular school. So not a lot of concern.
Can you tell us what happened? There was another offer that was made just recently, and it was sort of in between what both had been asking or requesting. But at this point, we're pretty much at an impasse. They're going to be meeting again on Friday, I know. But what do we know about what happened yesterday?
Yeah, I understand the meeting went a little longer than folks were expecting, but the union wasn't satisfied with the offer. It was a 7% salary increase plus a 1.5% bonus, about a 1% or a 1 student class size reduction at most schools, 2 students at some really high need schools. There's some counselor, they were going to hire more counselors, but not what the union was looking for. One interesting thing that we've learned, though, is that the state superintendent, Tony Thurman, was actually involved. He reached out to both parties, and according to the union, it was really his effort that led the district to provide this proposal in writing, which the union had been asking for 3 months, they say. Now, the district has not confirmed that, but they do say that he's been instrumental in trying to bring the parties together, and we understand from the Department of Education that he is planning to stay in close contact with them. So it'll be interesting to see his role. And yes, they are planning to meet again Friday morning is what we understand.
Okay, Vanessa, thank you for joining us. That's Vanessa Roncagno, and she is there at the picket lines in one of the schools, and we're going to continue. She's education reporter for the California Report. We're going to continue talking about the strike, and we have some people assembled with us. Let me tell you who is here. Amy Eng is president of the Oakland School Board. Welcome, Amy. Good to have you.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. We'll also say good morning to Megan Bumpus, who is here with me, executive board member for the Oakland Education Association and a teacher at Reach Academy. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning to you. And good morning also to Teresa Harrington, education reporter, with doing her focus as a journalist on the East Bay with EdSource. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Let me begin, if I may, with you, Amy. There seems to be, at this point, a real impasse and some serious stumbling blocks. We can't get to the numbers. What the fact-finding group has said, and what I guess is being said by those who oppose the union's request here for this kind of pay, is can't go that high. The money's simply not there.
That is correct. We are committed to prioritizing teacher retention here in this district. We want to do all that we can around increasing compensation and working conditions for our teachers. However, we also are committed as a board and a district to fiscal sustainability. And we know that in the past, the district has had a number of fiscal challenges. Of course, the last few years have been very challenging on that front. And so we want to both prioritize teacher retention, but also ensure that we remain under local district control. And the recent FICMAT report, our county and state trustees have also confirmed that we do have a deficit and fiscal challenge. And so while we do want to do everything we can to meet teachers' demands, we also have to live within our means and our fiscal reality.
Well, the fiscal reality is that a lot of consultants were paid. There was a lot of mismanagement. I don't need to go through all that with you. I mean, I'm certainly you've been with it more than you can at this point like. But the pension costs remain, and there's also some concern, ongoing concern, about the lowest pay in Alameda County for, and for that matter, neighborhood counties in terms of teacher pay. So the teachers want it up, and you're saying you can't make it, and yet there's also, let me ask you specifically about some charges that have been made, that there's been really over estimates in costs by the Oakland School Board, and we'll talk about that more specifically. But in other words, there is, and by the way, I should also mention, we've got a real enrollment problem too. The enrollments are going down, so I want to get into all this. I want to get into the fact that is the money there or is the money not there? You're saying it's not there, and there are people who are saying, yes, it is.
So you named a lot, and I'm happy to go through a lot of the specifics around budget, but I think the fact of the matter is, when you see the fact-finding report, we have limitations in terms of what we are able to afford. That being said, we are in the process of making significant reductions, $21.75 million of reductions, to eliminate our deficit, to restore our minimum 3% reserve, and to pay for priorities such as teacher and employee educator compensation. So we are committed to reprioritizing with what we have. The challenge is that it's a very difficult process because we are you should see some of the board meetings that we have had during the process of having to reduce and live within our means. We are looking at some programs that are nationally recognized and that we are support services to the schools and to the teachers themselves. But we are committed to teacher retention, and we are committed to doing everything we can. I am also, when folks talk about the growth within central administration, they don't realize that that growth is really program administration for support services like restorative justice, case managers, other programs that support our community schools initiatives. So while we are looking at reducing our administration, that does have an impact on our schools.
What about the question of lack of trust between the union and those the union are negotiating with? It's a big problem, isn't it?
I do think that there has been, there obviously has been some challenges around trust. We're doing everything we can to rebuild that trust. Our superintendent is a longtime educator here in Oakland. She's been here 21 years. I am an East Bay native. We're doing everything we can around really rebuilding and rebuilding that trust with longtime folks that are from Oakland and care deeply and passionately about Oakland.
Can I ask you about that, Megan Bumpus? Let me go to you on this. Megan Bumpus is executive board member of the Oakland Education Association, teacher at Marich Academy. When we're talking about trust, you say what?
There's definitely trust issues, and it's pretty clear to a lot of people that there's a lack of transparency around the budget. School board members and the superintendent talk about this structural deficit, but the staff and the school board haven't given evidence. There's an unexplained $60 million rise in expenditures between the end of last school year and when the budget was adopted, and the October budget revision, and the answers have been vague, or there have been none.
Or there have been no answers.
So, of course, there's a lack of trust. And when it comes to bargaining, it's been 19 months or so, and OEA definitely feels that OUSD has not been bargaining in good faith.
Does OUSD overestimate their expenses? Do they create appearances of a budget crisis? That's been a charge.
Yes. The numbers are there. There is a fund, the materials and supplies budget, that has been steadily declining since 2015. And so at the end of the 2017-2018, $7.9 million was allocated to this OUSD materials and supplies budget. And for this school year, that number jumped by over $30 million to $41.1 million. And that has not been explained by the school board or district staff.
Can I bring you into this, Teresa? Teresa Harrington, again, is education reporter with the, she does focus on the East Bay for EdSource. There's these conflicting, obviously, narratives, and we'll try to figure out what's going on here, but both would like to see, everybody would like to see more money for the teachers. At least that's what everybody says publicly.
Right. There are certain things that everybody agrees on, and that's definitely one of them.
But what they don't agree on is where the money is going to come from or if the money's even there.
Exactly. Yeah. And this distrust issue is something that I have a story coming out on today, as a matter of fact. And the fact finder also pointed out that there was this issue of distrust and lack of credibility on the district's part that's being asserted by the union, and that this definitely is an issue. And this funding that Megan is talking about, Amy has actually asked staff to say, okay, how much of these books and supplies are actually allocated, and how much of this money is just sitting there in a holding fund? And the staff has not answered that question.
So do we really even know what is in the budget? Because some have alleged that the budget figures keep changing, that they're transitional, or shall I say maybe even transitory.
Right. The numbers do keep changing. And right now when they're planning to vote on Monday on all these budget cuts, they're not looking at their three-year projections.
Excuse me, they're voting on $20.2 million, right?
Right. And as Amy said, they're looking at these trade-offs that are really difficult because they're cutting programs that they know are working, and that's not what they wanted to do. They wanted to cut things that were not working. And so the trade-offs are really hurting, and that's why they're saying we need to go to the state and ask for more money because we just can't do these trade-offs.
There is a theory that goes something like this. If those who are on strike stay longer on strike, maybe the state will act to a greater degree. Maybe the state should forgive the loan. Or there was all kinds of reasoning that money could come back in the coffers by some way getting the state to respond, Governor Newsom's new budget, et cetera.
Right. There is some additional money in the governor's budget for pension costs and I think for special education costs. And in fact, the district is not counting that money in their budget right now in their projections because they say, well, we can't be sure that this will actually come through. So actually, when they do adopt their budget in June, there very well could be more money. And also the state has offered some additional bailout funding to the district to help cover a portion of their deficit over the next 3 years. But right now it's a little bit vague how much their deficit is because they're not actually really explaining that to the public because they're in bargaining right now.
They're also losing money with the strike because absences mean they get less money.
Right. They absolutely get less money. They are not paying the teachers, though, so they're saving a little money there. But they are paying the people who are coming in as the substitutes $300 a day, which is also getting some people upset, saying, where are you getting this money from if you can't afford to pay our raises?
Let me have you address that, if I could, Megan Bumpus. Let me go to you on this, Amy Yang. I mean, that concern about losing money because of the strike.
Yes, I mean, obviously that is a challenge. I don't think that we can anticipate additional dollars coming from the state. That's why our state superintendent reached out to help bring parties together earlier on. If you look at LA and the experience with LA. Some folks said that LA was too big to fail in terms of state being able to produce additional revenue coming in to help support LA, and we did not see that happen in that case. And so we're doing everything we can within our means in the short term. I did want to address the $65 million if I can, because there has been additional detail that has come out around that. And while you are correct that there has been what some said was an overprojection, but what I would say was the board directing the staff to use a more conservative budget assumptions for this coming year. What we had the two previous years was less conservative numbers that were being used to make our budgets for 16-17 and 17-18, and when there was unanticipated and unforeseen circumstances, we had 2 years of very painful mid-year budget cuts that were disruptive to the entire system and entire schools. So through that process, what we learned is that we must use the most conservative assumptions that we have because we cannot have a third year of mid-year budget cuts. So what we did was we directed the superintendent to be conservative around the assumptions. Fortunately, this past year, we did do a little better than we thought in terms of reaching our 3% reserve. The 2 years prior, we did not, and what we had to do was make mid-year, very, very painful mid-year cuts to be able to maintain the minimum of 2% reserve, which would have triggered state receivership.
And again, Amy Ng is president of the Oakland School Board. Let me bring Peter Van Tassel into this. He's a principal of Cleveland Elementary School in Oakland. And Peter Van Tassel, good to have you with us. Welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
So what does a principal do when the strike is going on?
You know, it's actually, in some ways, it's the same as every day where you do everything you can to support your community and support your teachers. The number of kids on site is very different, and the number of teachers on site is very different. But other than that, you know, it's really just running around trying to make sure that the kids are getting as much education as they possibly can, that parents have a clear understanding of what's going on. And
if I may ask you, how many students actually showed up?
We do not have very many students today. We normally have 400, and we are way below that today.
Like less than 50, maybe?
Probably around that, yeah.
Yeah, and what about teachers? Do they have substitutes for all the teachers or most of them?
No, not at all. We have some district central office personnel who are on campus to support, we have one teacher also who's not striking today.
What if a principal wants to join the picket line in sympathy with the teachers?
That's really just not our role. I think, you know, just to be clear, all of us principals have a tremendous amount of sympathy for our teachers. Any success we have at the school, we know, is based on the great and hard work and dedication that our teachers display every day. All of us were teachers before. Most of us were teachers in Oakland before. Many of us were actually students in Oakland going way back. So that's true for myself. But in terms of the sympathy, you know, as much as we have sympathy, the reality is that, you know, many students, our Cleveland Elementary is 50% free and reduced lunch, which means that our families literally depend on being able to come into our building and eat food to make sure that they can eat every day. So many families are food insecure in Oakland, and really schools are where that food comes through our federal and state grants to feed kids. So at the very least, it's incredibly important to keep the doors open and things running smoothly for those kids that need to eat. But additionally, there's a lot of families that simply can't afford any alternatives. Every family, you know, every family in Oakland supports teachers. We all do. The question is really just based on their own context. They have to make the best decision for their families. And for many people, they don't have the luxury of being able to find long-term childcare on short notice, or suddenly have that as an extra expense, or be able to bring their own child to a job, and that does affect our most vulnerable families. So it's incredibly important to make sure.
I was just going to give a fact here. One-bedroom apartment in Oakland now costs about $2,300 on the average, and about 60% of teacher salary is that figure. You went to Sacramento, Peter. What did you talk about there, and why'd you go?
You know, as principals, we definitely support our teachers, although we're not going to be able to walk a picket line. And it's really just a question of like what is the best way to use our role to advocate for teachers and students in Oakland. And so one of the things we realized we could do is go out to Sacramento and let people know what's happening from our standpoint. We wanted to talk to as many legislators and people involved in the State Department of Education about three specific things. One being just increasing the amount of funding that is allocated to students in California. We are funded at less than half the level of other high-cost states like New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. We wanted to talk about also about the student or about the state loan that we received, you know, nearly a generation ago that we're still paying off to the tune of $6 million a year, which is a 2% raise for teachers right there.
Did you find any legislators who were sympathetic or responsive to that?
You know, everyone was incredibly sympathetic to the entire thing. It sounds like there's a lot of questions around that state loan because that loan isn't owned by the state anymore. It sounds like it was sold to another agency. So it would be tough to forgive that. It sounds like there's also concerns about other districts did have their loans forgiven. Other districts are still paying off their loans. Richmond successfully paid off their loans. So it sounds like there's a lot of conversation around that, but not necessarily a lot of movement. But I think everyone was pretty united in their support for raising education budgets. However, there weren't a lot of details about how exactly that's going to possibly happen besides Proposition 13 adjustment, which is looking to be on the ballot for 2020.
Yeah, it definitely is looking that way. And Peter, I'm glad you joined us here this morning. I appreciate being with us. Peter Van Tassel, again, is principal of Cleveland Elementary School in Oakland. And I want to go back to Megan Bumpus. Before I do that, I want to invite you, our listeners, to join. And, in fact, we would like to hear from you. If you have some thoughts about the ongoing strike, if you what do you think about the teachers? Really meet those demands. At one point, they seemed like they were coming to a figure at least in between the two, but at this point, they seem to be again at an impasse. So please feel free to give us a call now. Our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. We would like to hear from you. Join the program. Again, you can do it at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any of your thoughts to us, forum@kqed.org. And we certainly would like to hear your thoughts, so join us. And Megan Bumpus, I'd like to hear your thoughts as well as we come up on a break here. Your thoughts particularly about the fact, again, that we seem to be not able to get toward that figure that the union is asking for.
It's very frustrating, obviously. Hopefully everybody understands that we are doing this. We are on strike for Oakland students. It's very difficult to teach in Oakland with the under-resourced situation that we're in. It's extra difficult to teach at a high need school, and so teacher retention obviously is a huge issue. Teachers are not able to live in Oakland, as you already talked about the high rents here, and so having a living wage really will allow our students to have the consistency and stability. Kids at my school see teachers come and go every year.
But Megan, forgive me, we're coming up on a break, and I just want to mention there are other needs that are in this, smaller classrooms as part of the package. You've got one nurse for every 1,350 students. You've got one guidance counselor for every 600. And these are real issues, and we're going to talk about them, and we're going to hear from you, our listeners. Again, we invite your participation in the program. You can join us now toll-free at 866-733-6786. That number again, 866-733-6786, or email forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum. You're listening to Forum, and we're live at the Oakland Cultural Center in Oakland. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're on the road. We're in Oakland, and we're covering the strike for you and finding out really as much as we can about the ongoing strike, which started today. There is certainly hope that there will come to an agreement, both sides, and that maybe, in fact, they're going to be meeting again tomorrow. Could I actually go to you, Teresa Harrington, education reporter for EdSource? It could be resolved, at least theoretically, tomorrow, couldn't it?
It could if they decide that they agree. I think a sticking point is, of course, the salary. The teachers are saying it's not enough fast enough. And the question is, as we were already discussing, how much money do they really have? How much of a deficit do they really have? And what kind of trade-offs are they willing to make in terms of budget cuts?
Didn't you come across in your reporting somebody who said there's been little, if any, transparency, accountability, or inclusivity, to be cogent?
In terms of the budget cutting process, yes. In fact, they initially were going to make these budget cuts a couple of weeks ago, and then people came out saying, wait a minute, you know, there's been no transparency here. You haven't included people. In fact, one of the things I thought was very surprising was they were planning to cut foster care managers And then somebody on the board said, well, have you informed the foster care community? And they said, oh, no, we were going to tell them after you made the decision. And so Even the board was saying, wait a minute, that's not the way we want to operate here. And so Amy did decide to postpone the vote so there could be more transparency and more inclusivity.
Okay. And I'm going to read some comments that are coming in here. Robert says, this is a good day to recall. There is no more important job in our society than teaching our kids. Let's show teachers the respect commensurate with the importance of their work. Justin says, I'm a parent to two OUSD students. I understand the difficulty the district has with the budget, but I've also seen students and teachers suffer for decades because of mismanagement. It's time to stop this. Bold moves need to be taken to reduce costs and to balance funds for students and teachers. And Susanna says, where is the money? What happened to the $60 million? You want to take that for us, Teresa?
What happened to the $60 million? Yeah, that's definitely a question that's still out there. Part of the confusing part about it is there's restricted money, which is set aside for certain funds that you can only spend in certain ways, and then there's what they call unrestricted funding that can be spent for anything. And the district shifted millions of dollars from unrestricted to restricted and didn't really explain why, and people are still asking why. And then they also said there was a bunch of carryover money from last year in unrestricted, which makes it look like you have more of a deficit than you really have, but really the money is carryover, but it shows up as being money you need to spend this year. And so just the numbers, the way they look, are confusing, and the explanations have not been very clear.
Can you explain this to us, Amy, or at least help us understand this, Amy?
Yes, I can, because it is quite confusing, and as Teresa mentioned, when you combine unrestricted general fund and restricted is funds that are coming in that have to be used for a very specific purpose. They might be grant funds, parcel tax funds, or other revenue from the state or federal government. So we did ask for more detail on the restricted funds in particular, because the increase has really been on the restricted side. The $20 million that was shifted from unrestricted to restricted was actually our Measure G parcel tax, and that was at the request of both the committee and the community around parcel tax dollars coming in. We shouldn't be thinking about that as unrestricted general fund. Those are dollars that there was specific legislation that went in to be able to pass that, so we really should be considering that a restricted fund. So there is more detail on the restricted funds and the carryover. There is five main reasons for the OUSD carryover. This is on page 2 of the restricted detail that can be found on our website, both on the Fiscal Vitality website and also on the Labor Strike website. And like I said, it is very confusing, so I do like to direct folks there, but it has to do both with parcel tax dollars, carryover from 3 grants that were equivalent of $13 million in philanthropic funds, conservative spending during last year, where we knew that there was a lot of fiscal uncertainty, a conservative culture in terms of spending the private grants, and implementation of our new financial system and increased transparency around that. And then when you look at the increase of growth for this year, of the $65 million, $46.5 million of that is in restricted revenue. And so what you're seeing is both, because we're using conservative assumptions, we have both an increase in our projections, so we have new dollars coming in, and then we also have some carryover dollars from last year. So we are, as a board, concerned that we are holding. We don't want to see those funds just being held there. We do want to see them spent on the classroom and at our schools, and so we are spending those dollars. But however, like I said, the majority of the dollars coming in is restricted revenue that has to be used for defined purposes. And on the unrestricted side, last year we ended the year with, I think it was a 3.25% reserve. That is better than we anticipated. We were actually concerned that we were going to be below the 2% state mandated reserve, and we were making projections around 1%. We are pleased that we are now around the between 2.5% and 3% in our reserve. However, you'll see districts across the state that have 10%, 15% reserves. We have a minimum of 3% reserve requirement because we believe that we do want to have as much dollars invested in our teachers and our schools as possible. But that is a very precarious place to be, because what you saw in the 2 years before was when we fell below the 2% reserve, we had to do mid-year cuts.
Amy Eng is president of the Oakland School Board, and I'm going to go back to you on this, Megan Bubbinson. Could you also, we're talking about money, we have to bring in charter schools. I mean, because there's a lot of money that goes to the charter schools that many say should be going to the Oakland Public Schools. Let me get you on that.
Sure. I'd like to first just respond around a couple things. So there are at least two school board members. I watch or attend every school board meeting, and there's at least two school board members right now who have articulated very clearly that they feel comfortable going below the board's goal of having this, 3% or 3.5% in the reserve. And it feels like, because I've been watching all these long meetings with community showing up, it feels like they may be responding to hearing these really heartfelt and heart-wrenching public comments from students, from the Asian Pacific Islander community, from students who are impacted by possibly losing resources from the restorative justice programs. And so I just want to put that out there. Talking about these conservative projections really feels hurtful, because if there is money that is restricted that can be used right now, we have schools that are really suffering, and that money really needs to be put to use right now. Charter schools, obviously there's a lot of money that's being drained from our OUSC public schools. There was a report last school year, I think in the public interest, and it was talking about an estimate of $57 million. We know it's an issue. We know we need to take things to the state level, and we also have a school board that was heavily funded by, pro-charter billionaire nonprofit organizations and such. And so, yes, it's an issue, but I don't think we should lose focus. There's a lot of financial mismanagement, and there are a lot of things that we can do, but definitely charters have a huge impact. And when we talk, something that hasn't come up is the citywide plan to close 24 non-charter public schools. OEA especially, this is actually something that's being added to our contract language, or that we're trying to, is around the closing specifically of Roots International Academy. There's a process that was supposed to be followed, and this is a community that suddenly had been told, your school is going to close at the end of the school year without input, this top-down decision. And so we know that when a public school closes, a charter school can just swoop in and use that space. And so, yes, it's a huge issue, and we do need to think about the charter school issue in terms of the school closure thing that's happening right now. The public is very upset about it, and kids came out, and they shut down a school board meeting. They held school board members in this two-hour-long restorative justice circle, which was really frustrating to see adults kind of asserting themselves.
Just recalling it, you're having some breathing.
Oh, very much. It's very emotional being at school board meetings nowadays. There's a lot of pain that community is feeling.
Yeah, indeed, I can understand that. Megan Bubbus again here with us, executive board member of the Oakland Education Association and a teacher at Reach Academy. And let me reach to a caller. Let's go to the audience first. Maria joins us from the audience.
Hi, my name is Maria Mandrapa. I'm a Crocker Highlands first grade teacher. I was just on the picket line this morning. And I have a question for Amy Eng. I have only been with OUSD for 3 years, but I have friends at my school that have been there for 25 years. And to me, the budget crisis that has been going on for so long is a very easy way to keep people confused about the money in OUSD, and I just want to know what OUSD is doing to fix the budget problems and all of this confusion around the money, because the money is there and they need to find it.
Well, Amy Eng, you've certainly alluded to some of this, but could you clarify more why you can't find the money? I think that's really isn't that the tenor of your question, Maria? If you're saying the money is there, and again, we keep hearing this.
Yeah. You know, there is no secret. We are underfunded in terms of education in the state of California. It is an untenable position that we are in, that we are the fifth largest economy in the world, and we hover between 41st and 42nd in per pupil funding. That is absolutely unacceptable. We had a student that came to our board meeting at the this last week that said we shouldn't have to choose between librarians, restorative justice coordinators, counselors at our schools. It's absolutely correct. We shouldn't have to choose between these types of positions at our schools. We should be able to afford and fund all of these types of positions. We are fighting over scraps here, locally, and we absolutely recognize that. So that being said, we are looking at reprioritizing our budget so that we do look at teacher retention as a top priority and a top value of the district. While we do have schools like Crocker Highlands that have a higher retention rate, we also have schools that have a 17% over 3-year retention rate. And that's not acceptable for us as a district. We know that we need to invest more in our teachers, invest more in our schools. We're not going to be able to meet the goals that we have set forth as a district if we continue to turn over half our teachers in some of our schools every single year. And so we are looking at reprioritizing. And we also have to look at the realities, to your point, around our decade-long challenge around our fiscal situation. And so we are at the point now where enough is enough around the finances, and we've reconvened our budget and finance committee. We have a new system in place.
Could I be blunt about this? Yeah. There are some serious flaws in the state system of funding.
Absolutely.
Throughout the state. I mean, those have to be contended with as well.
Absolutely. That's why advocacy in Sacramento is so important. That's why our principals were there. That's why we are all very much in alignment around looking at greater resources that need to come in to be able to better support our teachers and our schools.
Let me bring a caller in here, and our first caller from Oakland, Katrina. Good morning. You're on the air. Katrina, are you there? Going once.
Lena.
All right. Let me try Lena then. Lena, are you there?
Hi.
Hi.
Yes, good morning. My question is about how these budget cuts affect kind of high-need students in special education with IEPs that call for specific services like one-on-one aid and language therapy, how they're disproportionately affected by these cuts.
Yeah, Teresa Harrington, can I go to you on that?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear her very well.
She wants to know about special education and how the cuts are affected by this and...
It's a big part
of the picture.
Okay. In the budget cutting process, one of the things the superintendent did was identify things that could not be cut, and special education was one thing that is protected. They're not cutting anything out of special education. However, that is part of the issue in terms of the state and the federal government not giving school districts enough money to cover their special education costs. That's also an issue that comes up when you talk about charter schools, because charter schools...
They have fewer students with special education.
General serve fewer and fewer of the what you call the high needs special ed, you know, the moderate to severe special education students.
And let me go to a comment here from, actually it's a comment from Nora, who says, I just left the picket line at Laurel Elementary this morning. I formerly worked in the district's central office. I can tell you that this district has perpetuated secrecy and a climate of fear among employees, a complete lack of transparency, and has squandered money on high-priced consultants and top administrators enough. And here's Betty Olson Jones, former president of the Oakland Education Association, sent in this question to you, Amy Ng. She says, please ask Amy Ng why the district is spending close to $300,000 a month on downtown central offices. Why aren't they moving those offices to school sites where they not only save on costs, but are in daily contact with the people and students they serve?
Thank you. So this gets into our unrestricted and restricted that revenue that we were talking about. So while it is true that there are costs that are associated with 1000 Broadway, currently they are being paid out of our restricted funds. We do need to be able to reduce that as well. It is part of the superintendent's plan to be able to come up with a plan around a long-term home for our administration building and this year. But for right now, it's not as though those funds could be used to pay for teacher salaries.
Let me go to another caller. Actually, Cole is joining us from a picket line at Oakland High. Vanessa Roncagno is with him. Let's go to you. Cole, welcome. Do we have Cole on the line here? Cole is on the picket line, but we thought we had him on the phone line as well. Okay.
Cole Morgan is here. I am here now.
Oh, you are here. Okay, good. I'm glad.
Yeah.
So tell us what you're experiencing and why you're out there.
Yeah, so my name is Cole Morgan. I'm a world and U.S. history teacher here at Oakland High School. And our picket line is going really great today. We're out here for higher wages for our teachers, smaller class sizes in general, and more support for our students at school, be it nurses. You know, we have one nurse, I believe it's around like every 20,000 students or so, something crazy like that. And we want to fix that. So we're out here trying to get what we need. to improve our education situation here in Oakland.
And are you out there mainly for money? Let me ask you that directly.
I would not say that the money is our main reason for being out here. I think it's really more about the students and getting what the students need. You know, I mean, the money is certainly a part of it, definitely. I think that we have a horrible teacher retention rate here. We have like a 25% turnover rate every single year for teachers in Oakland, and I believe firmly that our educational staff should have the opportunity to live in the community. And if we're turning over all the time, our students aren't getting what they need. You know, I was describing earlier to someone else who was interviewing me that teachers and students, we have this sort of symbiotic relationship, and that if the students are doing well, the teachers are doing well, and vice versa. So, sure, the money is a part of it, but really this is about the students, and we're doing all this for the students so that we can teach them effectively.
Well, you want smaller classes, too, and I realize resources, but there are over 500 teachers who leave each year from Oakland schools. What do you think that's all about? What do you sense?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
There are about 500 teachers each year who leave the Oakland schools, the problem with retention. Why do you think most of them are leaving?
Yeah, so most of them are leaving. The problem with our retention actually does stem from, a lot of it is from salary. We're the lowest paid district in Alameda County. We started around $45,000 or $46,000 a year, which, you know, does not keep up with the median cost of, with the minimum cost of rent in this area. So that definitely has to do with a lot of the reason why the teachers are leaving. I think a lot of the teachers don't feel respected. You know, when we brought our demands to the district, we don't feel respected there. And they see greener pastures elsewhere. And so they sort of move out. And that's bad for the students, because if teachers are leaving all the time, it creates a more negative classroom culture. And as someone who came in as a brand new teacher 2 years ago, we saw that with the sort of our classroom culture with our students. A lot of the students were, definitely not, super trusting of us and whatnot. And I've been there now for 3 years. I built up a great relationship with my kids, and I want to continue that.
One final question for you, Cole, before I let you go back to the picket line. How long are you in for this, do you think?
You know, we're in for this until we get a contract from the district that is amicable for both of us. We could definitely, it might be 1 week, it might be like 3 weeks. We have no idea how long this is going to go for, but we're going to be out here until we get what our students need.
Okay. I thank you for joining us. Appreciate you being with us. That's
thank you so much.
Cole, who's out on the picket line at Oakland High. And let me go to someone in the audience next. Hugh, join us. You're on. Is this a regular caller, Hugh, by the way?
Yes, it is.
I could tell by your voice, yeah.
So my son went to Glenview Elementary and Edna Brewer Middle School, two of the most diverse Foothills schools, where we had an overall positive experience. And firstly, I just wanted to urge compromise. OUSD could be taken over again by the state, and we don't want that to happen. But, of course, teachers do need a raise. And, of course, working-class parents and poor parents need to get their kids to school all the while. The reason I'm calling and my question is about not successful charters, but failed charters. When the district has deemed a charter is failing its students, its kids, the charter can appeal the school district's decision to the county, which almost always overrules the school district. Even if it fails its appeal at the county, it can appeal to the state school board. So what is gradually happening is public schools that are having challenges are being turned into failed charters. And that is not for our students. And that is not a solution that is good for the school district, for the state, and most importantly, for the students. And this needs to be looked at all the way up to the state. And I'd like your guest comments.
Yeah, well, thank you for the questions, Hugh. And can I go to you on this, Teresa Harrington?
Yes. The governor actually is having a task force look at this issue and other issues, and the Oakland School Board has come up with a legislative platform. It actually hires a lobbyist to lobby on its behalf, and this is one of the issues that they're looking at and one of their frustrations, because as part of their citywide schools plan, they are trying to look at the schools and how they fit together, both charter and district. And they are saying, okay, we have the power to close our own schools, but even if we try to close a charter school because of poor performance, the county will overrule them. And that, in fact, has been happening. The state recently released the list of the lowest performing schools in the state, and 21 were district schools in Oakland and 7 were charter schools. So there definitely are low performing charter schools here in Oakland.
Well, in fact, one of our listeners, Aparna, says, wants to know about the recent school closures and the charter schools figuring into the strike, asking a question, where do the two sides stand? They stand up.
The charter schools are sort of not taking a stand right now. They're just going on with business as usual. They are worried, though, about the impact and the backlash that happened in L.A. and whether they'll get the same backlash here.
And we go to another caller. Katrina joins us. Katrina, you're on the air.
I just came from the picket line at Fremont High School in East Oakland, where my wife is a teacher, and there were a lot of teachers and students out there, as well as support staff. They're actually providing breakfast and lunch outside so that students don't have to cross the picket line to get their meals that they need. And a big concern that I was hearing out there is that the district yesterday offering the 7% raise to teachers, not only have they made claims like this in the past, but they refuse to back them up. They also are fighting for not only a raise for the teachers, but also for the support staff, the nurses, and the counselors. And the teachers are not going to leave those other support staff in the dust by accepting a raise just for themselves without also getting funding for the support staff and lower class sizes and all the other things that they're asking for. And it's been a pattern for the district over the past 2 years of them offering things that sound like a good deal but are not actually meeting all of the needs of Oakland students and educators and staff. And but meanwhile, they are spending millions of dollars on offices when they have free space. And so they're just wondering, like, why are they spending all this money on office space that they don't need and then claiming that there's no money for the schools?
I think that's again to you, Amy Ng.
I'm sorry, I had a hard time hearing the specific question.
No, she's talking about expenditures on office space and other costs in addition to just a pay raise for teachers that have to be factored into the big picture and aren't being factored in.
So in terms of our commitment towards investments to teachers, what I'm hearing is it is both compensation but also working conditions. And we are committed to doing what we can within our means to be able to provide that. I know that it as part of our latest offer, we did also build in a long-term plan. We know that when we're the lowest salary in all of Alameda County, which is unacceptable, by the way, we do need to make progress about that. There's within our financial reality, we know that it's also going to be a long-term plan over multiple contracts. So we did name that there is a long-term plan in terms of reinvesting and investing more in terms of teacher compensation.
Can I get Megan Mumbus to respond to that? I mean, there's a long-term plan, and also, the district offered more money than they did initially. I mean, they kind of came not exactly halfway, but they came upward. Megan?
They did. I believe that the OEA membership will not be satisfied with that offer. Working conditions is a huge concern, and equity is a huge issue in the executive board. Last week we had a conversation about class size reduction and how it's most important to have the numbers reduced way more in our highest need schools, because that's a place with a high attrition rate, and that is a place with majority of students, you know, having trauma. And so we really need, the school board has this equity policy, but it feels like community has to keep persisting and reminding them that equity needs to be at the center of their conversations.
Since you mentioned equity, I want to read a comment from Angela, one of our listeners. Says, why is it that flatland schools always get targeted to be closed for low enrollment? We all know that small class size is a positive strategy for at-risk kids. Why is it that black and brown children are always parceled out to schools away from their communities to adjust to the budgets? You see things that way, Megan?
Yes, with the closure, closure that we see hopefully not happening at the end of this school year with Roots International, there's this push for this, quote, opportunity ticket where they're going to give kids a chance to go to a school of their choice, but it's if there's a spot open, and then you're telling kids that they need to find a way to get to a school that's outside of their neighborhood. So you're displacing black and brown youth from their neighborhood school.
And since we're talking about class size, I want to read a comment from Susan, who writes, I haven't heard any numbers regarding maximum class sizes. I am a full-time substitute in Richmond and can vouch that there are worlds of difference between 24 K-3 students in a class and 18. There is real impact on quality of teaching and number of students in the school, in the room, excuse me. Mike, in the audience, can we go to you quickly as we're coming up on the break here? Thanks for joining us.
Hi, I'm Mike Hutchinson, a proud graduate of Oakland Public Schools. We know that the district closed their books on the last school year with a $29.3 million surplus. We also know, according to the district, that enrollment since 2013 is up 200 students and state funding is up 46%. So my question is for the school board. What are you going to do to stop this mismanagement, to end this strike and get our students back in school?
Thank you, Mike, for that. Let's go quickly to Amy Ann because we are obviously coming up at a break.
Thank you. I did speak in depth around the carryover from last year, the specifics around the restricted and unrestricted, and also around how we are allocating the restricted dollars this year. I would like to point folks to the restricted detail page that is both on the strike website and also on the website for fiscal vitality.
And let me thank Mike for the question. Thanks to all our listeners who were involved in this hour. We have another hour ahead. We're going to find out, what do you do when strike is going on? We're going to hear from some parents, and we're going to hear from you as well and invite you to join us. Stay tuned for that. It's next. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis. On view through April 14th, Blue and Yellow Corridor, an iconic work by Bruce Newman, realized on the very grounds where the artist conceived it.